Hello and welcome to Nerdy Boys Reviews. We're your hosts. I'm Nerdy Boy Scott.
And I'm Nerdy Boy Christian.
This is your weekly nerd podcast where we review the new and old in nerdy movies. Explicit content warning. This podcast may not be suitable for all listeners of all ages. Material on this podcast has been deemed to be vulgar, rude, or sometimes even crude. So you have been warned. What up, my motherfucking nerdy peeps? What's going down, everybody?
Hey.
What up,
man? How's it going?
Oh, you know, I'm tired.
Yeah, I can tell. So, I mean, what time did you go to bed last night?
I don't know. I don't sleep anymore.
Well, I mean, because, like, I remember you, like, came out when I was, like, trying to go to bed. And, like, we're sitting there. And then I don't remember if you left before I fell asleep or after. But, like, I think I fell asleep around, like, what, 1:32?
No. I was too drunk. I don't know.
But then, yeah. And I woke up at, like, 7 this morning. And you woke
up
at,
yeah, like, it must be nice.
9:30.
Whatever, dude. I was exhausted.
Yeah. But that's good. That's good. You know, drinking is fun and stuff, right?
Yeah.
There you go.
It's a good time.
Yeah, we're here today, obviously, to talk to you about The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. I mean, because that's been a thing we haven't done since we talked about The Fellowship of the Ring. But, you know, before that, guys, guess what? E3 happened, and so we're going to be talking about that. We're going to get some very strong opinions, hopefully, from people, maybe Scott, maybe some other people.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And we saw The Incredibles, Incredibles 2.
What?
Yeah, so we'll be talking about that probably next week, or, you know, just give everybody some time to watch it. You know, sometimes we don't, sometimes we do, but with this movie, we will. And when we went to that movie, I rolled down my window in my car, and it, like, made a weird clunky sound, and then we got to the movie theater, and it wouldn't roll up, and it sounds like the glass broke off of, like, the little thing, you know, the track.
Right.
Because it sounded like there were, like, bits of glass in there. Like, the motor still worked. And when, you know, you hit the button, it goes... And, you know, so I was like, oh, it's clearly working, but the window won't fucking roll up. So it was very stressful, and I was very scared that my car was going to be vandalized in my drive shaft. It would be taken or some shit. Like...
Yeah, he's concerning. Talking about... He's just like, what if they steal my steering wheel?
Yeah,
God, it's just so funny when you say it out loud. You know what I mean?
In classic millennial fashion, instead of just getting it repaired, I just bought a new car.
What?
Because why fix something that's broken when you can replace it?
Exactly.
Like, this makes me think, because, like, you know, like, I don't think of myself as, like, the typical millennial, you know, like, lazy and this and that, entitled, whatever. But, like, instead of washing, like, certain, like, things, like towels or mats, I'll just buy new ones. Because it's, like, to me, it seems like such a pain in the ass to wash towels. Because, you know, with our washers and dryers in our apartments, they never fucking dry. Like, when you
have,
like thick-ass cotton and shit, like, I'm not trying to sit there and pay $3 on a dryer to try to get this shit dry.
I did.
So I'll just fucking buy new towels or something, you know? Like, I don't know.
Sorry, I'm not a rich man like you.
You can buy towels for like $3-4. I mean,
oh,
like,
calm down there, deep pockets.
Yeah. And then also, we're going to Fandemic next weekend.
Sick.
Are you going?
Yeah, I think so.
Are you sure?
Maybe.
Because you haven't told me, and if you want to go, I'll help you go. But if you don't need help, then I'm not going to help you.
Yeah. Something like that.
So yeah, we'll be there. It'll be cool, and we'll try to cosplay. But who knows? It might be hot, and I might die. So
yeah.
But anyway, we're gonna talk to you about The Two Towers, guys. The second film.
Wait.
Oh, hold up. Chill the fuck out.
You didn't even tell him what kind of car you bought.
Oh, okay.
Or what went down?
Yeah, so I bought a 2015 Volkswagen Jetta 5-speed manual transmission. And, you know...
With the color white.
Yeah, so this is kind of, you know, I test drove it, and it was fine. And then we, you know, the lady was like, she was pretty cool. Her name's Michelle at Volkswagen in Elk Grove. So she's very helpful if you want to buy a car. So go talk to her. She was talking to us. She's like, you know, are you just looking today, or are you, like, if the terms are right, would you buy a car? And I was like, yeah, obviously, if the terms are right, I'd buy a car. So we go in the little office, you know, and she's like asking me all these questions, and I'm fumbling over my words because, you know, she's a pretty lady, and also I just don't
she
know
was
how to make
pretty,
decisions. You know, I'm a bad adult. So, you know, she's like, well, what, you know, what can you put down? She's like talking about maybe you won't get approved, and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, you ran my credit. You see my credit score is almost 800. You know I have 3 years of buying a car history, never made a late payment. Like I don't understand how someone can say, oh, you might not get approved, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, like, they're just trying to...
Dude, that's the tactic, bro.
Yeah, so I was like, Scott's like, you know, trying to hype me up beforehand. He's like, all right, don't take this. He's like, just, like, make sure you tell them, you know, you lowball them with what you want. Like, they don't give a shit. They get these cars cheap. Just fucking do all this shit. And she's like, what could you, like, if you had to put money down, what you could put down? I think
it'd be easier to fix my window, to be honest. Yeah. I don't know.
You know, I'm like, I gotta do what makes, you know, the most financial sense for me.
I told him, right? I said lowball it, right? And this fucker said almost $300 a month. I was just like, what the hell?
And Scott's like, hold up. You know, he just gave me that look like, shut the fuck up, I'm going to take care of this. And Michelle's like asking questions. She's like, well, you know, he's paying $215 right now. He's trying to stay around that same area. We need to stay in the same area, boys. And we're going to work on that, you know. So pretty much Scott told her my terms, even though I didn't know my terms, but Scott told her my terms around $215 a month. You know, and I, you know, mentioned, like, the way we get away with not putting so much down and all this stuff, and
right.
the lower trade-in value and stuff is the interest rate, you know? So then she went out, and she's like, all right, I'll go talk to them, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, Scott was like, what to you is a fine interest rate? And I said, anything lower than 5%. I got about 4 point something. So got under that 5%, boys. My payments are $236. A month,
right.
So you know, not much more. $246, so $30 more than what I'm paying right now, which isn't bad. Same term, they bumped up my trade in to about $3,200, so that helped as well. I had to put, you know, some money down, but it all worked out. You know,
yeah,
master negotiator over
yeah,
here.
Yeah, dude, I wasn't having it, dude. I was like, I could tell. Christian, like, so, like, Christian bought a Fiat, like, back, like, 3 years ago.
Yeah, it was 3 years ago.
And I think at the time, Christian, like, thought it was the greatest idea in the world.
Well,
and then, like, he kind of, like, slowly, like, fell out of love with the car and, like, realized how kind of impractical, like, that small of a car is.
I still like the car, you know, like, I'm a weird person. Like, I don't get overly hyped about things. And, like,
yeah.
I'm, like, I'm a terrible person, guys. Like, I don't allow myself... I don't live life to its full. I don't allow myself to enjoy things. I'm always trying to be practical and think about, like, the responsibilities and the consequences and all that kind of stuff, you know? So it's like, you know, I have this new car, and, like, I enjoy driving. It's a really fun car to drive, and I like that it's a stick shift and stuff. But then I'm just like, yeah, I have to make these payments, and I have to make sure I get the insurance, and I have to make sure I do all these other things. Like, you know, it's like almost like not allowing yourself to enjoy it. So just don't be like me. You know, yeah. Enjoy your things.
But the thing is, you got to remember, it's like sometimes you sweat a little bit too much of the small details. It's like, regardless, you would have been making payments anyways.
Right.
I mean,
right.
They're slightly higher, but that's only like a short-term thing, you know.
The only thing that really irritates me is I just paid that car registration on my old car.
Yeah, I think that was like something that like was playing in your mind a little too much, and it's like, dude, and honestly, who cares, because this car is going to be registered. I almost feel like you felt like because you got that one registered, now you're gonna have to double up and pay like this registration too or whatever, you know.
No, I didn't feel like that, because I know like they incorporate those fees,
yeah,
and whatever, but like it's like that's money that I wouldn't have had to pay,
yeah,
you know.
That lady was hella trying to bullshit us, dude, because I remember like when I went and like looked at a car, like, because I think I was actually thinking about getting a Fiat at the same time as Christian, because I needed,
oh, yeah,
a new car too. And they were hella bullshitting me, dude. And I was just like, no, I'm good, you know. And I actually ended up like paying like more for my car now than I would have for like the Fiat or whatever. But like, I think back then, like, I didn't make that much money or whatever. But like, dude, they just hella bullshit you. Like, the thing you guys got to remember, right, is like, you have to be willing to walk away and say no and go visit a different dealership. Like, you might have wasted your time test driving and whatnot or whatever, but like, that's okay, because you got to find something that you'll be comfortable with. So it's like, going to like the dealership with like a number in mind. So it's like, say you like the max you'll pay is like $250, right? That's like a pretty good payment for a car, to be honest with you. And so you want to try to lowball them a little bit, like, you know what, like I really want to be around $200, you know, so you give yourself that $50 wiggle room. And then like, just like, you know, absolutely like, dude, I can't do more than, you know, this or whatever, and let them come back to you, like, because their bottom line is to sell that car. They don't give a shit what you pay monthly on it. They will adjust the tag price. They will adjust what they're taking. They originally wanted to take Christian's like Fiat in for like $800.
Yeah,
dude.
They were bullshitting, dude.
And like, let me tell you, dude, I already knew what they were trying to do. They tried to come in and like, I did the math like hella quick on my phone, because I was like, I already know, and like, you know, what's what. And I came up with the number of like, actually, you know, it's hella funny. I was like, almost dead on. You yeah. almost walked, because I came up, I even said, I was like, he should be paying, you know, based off of what the trade-in is and what he says that he could pay, was like $242. He ended up walking out like $236.
Yeah, like $246 or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Something, right, still, something real close to that. Bad, yeah. And she tried to come in and say like $350. I was looking at her, and she was like looking at me, and I was looking at her, and I was like kind of giving her that look like, you know what's up. Like, don't bullshit
yeah,
me, girl.
It's really not that bad, like what we ended up getting. And you know, if I have a recommendation, just be like, go on like a weekday if you can, because yeah. it seems like they, like, if they're really slow and they're not selling vehicles that day, like, they'll do whatever they can to get you
right,
like,
yeah,
in a car,
yeah,
because
you know? You got to remember, like, these people, like, they make their living off of selling like their car or whatever, you know, like, so they really don't give a shit what they sell it for. And more of the story, if you guys need help, take me as the master negotiator.
Yeah.
I'll get y'all sorted, man.
And it all worked out, because afterward I was still able to make my friend's concert. They played at Holy Diver. My friend Brady, his band is called Eyes Like Lanterns. You can check them out online.
Wicked, yeah. Dude.
It's pretty cool. Hell anyway, yeah. Happy Father's Day.
Yes, happy Father's Day.
So, yeah.
To all the folks out there.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So, anything else? Anything else?
No. I don't think so.
Great.
All right, guys. We are going to get into the Two Towers.
Yeah. So, you know, Two Towers, we kick off kind of not where we left off, but we show what happens when Gandalf falls. He's fighting the Balrog. He falls. And we kind of see that thing. And then it's like kind of like a dream that Frodo's having, which is really cool, because we kind of get anchored back into this, you know, little person POV, like the grounded people. Like, we get grounded pretty much right away in this movie, which is pretty important, because that's what Frodo and Sam are for, is to ground us, to relate to the audience, you know, while all our other heroes are doing this big fucking war kind of shit, you know. So, like... Frodo and Sam and Gollum is like our basic, you know, little thing that we have going on at the beginning of this movie. So how does like that work for you? Like them like kind of running in circles through the mountains, and like Gollum showing up and fighting him and kind of taking him as like their slave in a way. Yeah.
I mean, it works. I mean, they don't really know where they're going. Obviously, they don't have like a giant map to like say, hey, look, we got to go this way, you know, like Gollum knows like where to take the ring, although they know they can't really trust Gollum either. You know? Well, Sam knows that. Frodo's like kind of, I don't know, like he's just such a kind hearted feller.
Yeah. Frodo just takes pity on Gollum. You know, obviously after the fellowship, you know, the stories that Gandalf had told him about Gollum and Bilbo and how Bilbo took pity on him. And he kind of feels the same way, like he's just like this miserable creature as a result of the ring, you know. And Frodo has to believe in his heart that Gollum can be saved, so he can believe that he can be saved, because he knows he's falling, you know, to the temptation of the ring as well. If Gollum can be saved, then in his mind he feels he can be saved. But he's also just a really kind-hearted hobbit, you know?
Yeah.
Which is great.
At this point, you're just like, dude, Sam is the biggest dick in the world, dude.
Sam is just very, very protective of Frodo. Like, because that is his master. Like, you know, it's modern day, it's hard to put it in those terms, but that's what he is. He's lower than Frodo, so.
Well, yeah, but like in the movie, you don't know that. You know, because they don't really, explain any of like the class details of like the Shire and hobbits and things like that. They don't give us any of that information.
Right.
So we just know that they're friends, really.
Right, yeah. I mean, pretty much. But yeah, he is super protective of Frodo, like very suspicious of Gollum for good reason as well.
Well, I guess you do, because he does call him Master Frodo all the time, right? Doesn't he? I'm pretty sure he does.
But, you know, some to just casual viewers, he could just because he works for him, you know? He's his gardener or whatever.
Right, yeah.
So, this is one of the things where, you know, you kind of get interested in why Gollum is helping them and, you know, how much power the ring has around him. Like, the real reason is because, you know, he wants to be around the ring.
Right,
but he also, he just like Sauron, can't fathom the idea that people would want to destroy it. So he doesn't know that Frodo's going to destroy the ring. He just knows Frodo wants to go to Mordor. Like, he thinks he might take it back and give it to Sauron, or he might take it and try to destroy Sauron. And he knows either way that Sauron is going to try to get the ring, and he knows that will be his opportunity to get it. And that's why he agrees to help them, pretty much. You know, and also they could just kill him in his sleep or something. But he could kill them in their sleep as well. So, and then we kind of get like this really dual personality thing between Smeagol and Gollum. And that's like, that is really interesting. Like, you know, the Gollum half is the half of like that's been corrupted by the ring, you know, the half it's like, it's really interesting to see, because it's like a personification of how the ring works on your mind, like as a ring bearer. Like, that's what Frodo goes through sometimes, like when he's tempted to put it on, he'll find himself like touching it and stuff, like subconsciously that's the ring speaking to him, you know? So like, it's really cool to see. And Gollum is just terrifying, isn't he?
He's definitely just He's like, what the hell, dude? Well, like I don't know. It's kind of like interesting to see, because it's almost like there's a glimmer of hope that like he can be redeemed, but it's like slowly as the movie like progresses, you just see like slowly it just like the Gollum just takes back over Smeagol.
Right. Know? Yeah. I mean, it's so in this movie. In the movie version, it's like mostly because like he does kind of come around to them a little bit.
Right.
And you see him kind of like becoming more Smeagol. And then when Faramir and his company kind of like step in and like beat him and stuff, like he feels like they can't be trusted. And that's when he kind of comes up with the plot to get the ring from them.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we won't talk about, because that happens in the Return of the King movie. So.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like, that's almost the entire extent of, like, what Frodo and Sam are up to.
Yeah, I mean, they go through the marshes and then get to the Morannon, the Black Gate, and, you know, that's a point of contention as well, where Gollum's like, no, don't go to the Black Gate. Like, there's another way that's better, you know, pretty much. And it's really interesting that, like, he won't let him take the ring through the Black Gate. Like, is he just... It's really interesting to me, because I don't really understand why he doesn't, like, because he knows they're so close to Mordor. He's afraid of, like, them trying to cross that path and,
yeah, like,
you know,
I think
they'll be seen.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what it is. Like, he just doesn't want to get captured himself.
He just wants to be around him long enough to get the ring.
Right, exactly. He knows if they go through, like, the Black Gate that they'll all be captured, and then, like, the ring will be lost to him. You know, he doesn't care about, you know, Frodo. It's like the ring is going to be lost to him. Like, he knows that he loses his opportunity once they go into the Black Gate. It's like they had their opportunity to enter it, but, you know, it's like it's only a matter of time. Like, how long are you going to last through going that route, you know? And obviously, Gollum knew an alternate route, which is just, like, an overall better route.
Which, you know, in the books, you find out he's taken the route in Minas Morgul more than one time. Like, he's befriended... the creature that lives above there and fed her with orcs and things like that. So, that's kind of interesting as well. But there's a really interesting structure change. And that's, I think it was maybe a real challenge for Peter Jackson in making this movie, is the book is structured where, you enter, and it's the first thing that happens is the death of Boromir. And then we just follow Aragorn and Legolas and Gimli and Merry and Pippin all the way through half that book. And bam, and then all the way back to Frodo and Sam and their story, which is really difficult to do, you know, like in a movie. So that's why they kind of intercut it more, which is pretty interesting. And it makes sense, like, more chronologically as well.
Right. Yeah.
So that all works. But let's talk about then Faramir in this movie. He doesn't... I like Faramir fine in the movie. He just is nothing like how he is in the book. And I think they do it because they want the ring to seem like it's still powerful and it's still weighing on everybody's mind. You know, they want to connect him as well with his brother Boromir more, make him seem more similar probably. But in the book, he absolutely cares nothing for the ring. He doesn't even know what it is. He doesn't want to know what it is. He promised Frodo if he ever found whatever it is that he's carrying by the highway, he would leave it. He wouldn't touch it. And it's like he's just like a really good guy in the book. He would never beat Gollum. But how does he work for you in the movie?
Yeah, he works just fine. I mean, I think his character's cool.
Yeah. I think he just gets hard shafted by the desire, I think, of Peter Jackson and Philippa Boyens and them to, like, make it seem like the ring has this power over just anyone, you know?
Right, yeah.
Which, except Aragorn, right? Aragorn, who's, like, never tempted by it ever, you know? Which they do as, like, to make the Boromir the foil of Aragorn, you know, like, that kind of thing.
Right.
So, I mean, it works, I think, structurally and narratively for the movie.
You just don't appreciate the changes made from, like, the original context.
It's like, yeah, because of how much I love the character of Faramir in the books.
Hashtag Team Boromir, bitches.
Boromir's, like, I don't think we even disagree on Boromir. We both agree that, like, he's just a great warrior who, you know, he is a hero and, like, it's pride is his downfall, pretty much, you know?
My brother.
Yeah, but, yeah, I just love the character of Faramir in the book so much that I feel like he kind of got hard shafted. It's like what they did to Superman in some Superman movies. But,
wow. Disrespect.
Yeah. Well, you hate that, right? Yeah. Some of those changes, so.
No, I mean, the disrespect that they showed to Faramir, then.
Right.
That's what I meant.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's really when he sees the pain and stuff that Frodo's going through when the Nazgul attacks off Gilead in the movie where he kind of, like, shows his honor, you know, shows his quality, as Samwise Gamgee says. All
right. Hear me out, right?
Yes.
Faramir's a douchebag, dude. In the movie, he is a douche, dude.
Dude, when his men were beating Gollum, you're just like, oh my god, like why?
I'm just like, this is like Boromir's brother. Like what? What?
Yeah.
Things? I don't know. I was just like, ugh, this guy. Hope he dies.
Yeah, he's kind of just a major fucking douchebag, dude. Like, and then like there were, like. There are obviously a lot of changes from the books to movies and anything, but it's like, I don't understand the need for it. I understand why they did it. I just don't think it was necessary to do it, you know?
Right, yeah.
Like, because even in the book, like, you're suspicious of Faramir because of, like, how, like, secretive he's kind of being, like, and he's kind of toying with them and, like, joking with them, being sarcastic and stuff, like, and it seems like he's kind of being a douchebag in a way, but, like, nothing like this where he's kind of like cruel in a way.
Yeah, this one is like more a sadistic sort of nature, and he almost like picks up like Boromir's like ideal of like what he said in Rivendell when he's like saying, let's take the ring, we could use this, you know, in the battle, you know?
Right. Well, and that comes from his dad, you know?
Yeah. Like, and like that's kind of like where they I think like shape the version of Faramir in this, like he actually takes Boromir's step one action further and then realizes that it's wrong, you know?
Right.
Like, and he, it almost cost us everything, you know what I mean? Like, it's not good. Like, it just shows like the power of the ring, and I don't know. It's like, I think like the adaptive choices are good.
Yeah. You know? I mean, it definitely adds to the drama of it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Which they also did with Treebeard in this movie, because in the book, he never doubts anything. He's never like, we need to decide if we're going to, you know, go and attack Isengard, and then they decide not to in the movie. And then when Merry and Pippin show him like, oh, look at what he's been doing. He's like, oh, fuck Saruman. We're going to go fuck him up, you know? Whereas in the book, like, they don't need that. And I remember watching, like, some of the additional features and stuff on these movies. And one of the writers said that the reason they did that is because they feel like if they didn't, Merry and Pippin have no purpose there. Like, they're just baggage for him, you know?
Yeah. Like, that is kind of true. And that's an interesting kind of take.
Right. So
I think that's fine, though. To like, that's like a minor change where it's like, it doesn't really make a difference.
They did that one to add to the drama. And two, because they don't really show like the meeting of the of Merry and Pippin with Gandalf, you know, where like that's why Treebeard is kind of carrying them around, you know?
Right.
So I mean, it's definitely an interesting choice. Speaking of Treebeard, God, what a good character Treebeard is. I mean, he's great in the books and in the movie. John Rhys Davies, who plays Gimli, voices him as well. It's really interesting. And I love all like the Treebeard and stuff and the Ent Wives. And if you guys watch The Fellowship of the Ring, one of the lines that Galadriel has when she's doing that 8-minute prologue and she says, "I feel it in the water, like the earth has changed or the world has changed," whatever. Yeah. That is a Treebeard line from the end of Return of the King. So like it's like really cool to like see like how they've rearranged these lines to fit their adaptive work, you know. So
Right,
I really like it. I really like it. Nothing else with Frodo and Sam, right? Except for we end this movie with Gollum and his plan to take them to her, the creature who lives above Cerith Ungol. Whereas in the book, that's one of the last chapters in the Two Towers is when they go up Cerith Ungol and find the great beast. So whereas this movie, we center on the climax of the Battle of Helm's Deep. That is our big, big centerpiece of this movie.
Yeah, one of the greatest like war kind of scenes.
Right.
And all of like movies that I can really think of. I mean, obviously you have like some great battles throughout like cinema and whatnot, but like this one was good.
Yeah.
This one was great.
Definitely. Hey guys. All right. So what's funny is we just paused the podcast because our friend Colton showed up. Say hi, Colton.
Hey guys, how's it going?
What's up, dude? Yeah. So he's gonna join us for the rest of this podcast. It's been a long time since you've seen The Two Towers, right?
Yeah, it's been quite a while. And the funny thing is it's one of the ones I actually can't say I remember the most. The first and the third are the ones that I
really, this is like my favorite one actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think this one was definitely a huge challenge for the writers, especially because they were planning on only doing like a two, like it was originally one movie and then it was two and then it became three, so they kind of had to like do all this structuring and scaffolding in it. Are you a big fan of Lord of the Rings or like casual fan, or do you just kind of not care? You take it or leave it.
I would say I'm more of a casual fan. I definitely like Howard Shore's orchestral scores.
Yeah, it's really
more
good.
More than anything. But like I said, I think I remember the third the most actually because I saw it in theaters at the time. So the second one, I actually watched the last, which is, I guess, such a sin because I watched the first and the third, then the second. So...
Well, yeah, I mean, did were you a little confused when you saw the third one?
The funny thing is, no, I wasn't. Well, I'm maybe now that I dwell on it, perhaps, but I think at the time I didn't care that much because I thought the action was so awesome. I don't know.
So interesting. So you guys are like kind of like in agreement because like isn't like Return of the King your favorite one, Christian?
I like Return of the King a lot. I think we'll talk about that on our Return of the King podcast. There, I have issues with certain things that they did. Honestly, I think Fellowship is one of the better adaptions they've done. Like, I think Fellowship is one of my is actually my favorite probably
because they had the hero of the story in there. Duh,
Boromir. Yes,
yeah,
hero.
Dude.
So let's get on with it. Let's talk about Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli. They are pursuing Merry and Pippin across the fields of Rohan when they come across Éomer.
Yes.
And Éomer is kind of a mixture in the movie of himself and a soldier called Erkenbrand, who's like this really cool soldier. We like never see him until the end of the movie, but like we hear all these great stories about him throughout the book, you know?
Really?
And okay. So pretty much what they did is Éomer in the book is there the whole time. He's always with them. Whereas in the movie, you know, he goes away because he's been banished or exiled or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because the king's, mind has been poisoned.
Right, he shows up at the end with Gandalf during the Battle of Helm's
Deep.
In the end of the book, or in Helm's Deep in the book, it's Erkenbrand who comes back with Gandalf. So they kind of combine the characters, and there's no problem with that, guys. Like, Erkenbrand's such a minor character, and it works better for it to be Éomer, you know? To really show, like, how depressed and under the control of Grima Wormtongue and Saruman that... Théoden was. So,
right.
But also a little change. Go ahead. Sorry.
Let me tell you, right? And out of any battle or like knights or anything like that, like the Warriors of Rohan are like, can sound like the coolest looking ones I've ever come across. I'm just like, man, they just look so fucking cool.
Well, and you, I know you and Colton, I think too, are both major fans of history, right?
Yes.
And the Riders of Rohan, the Rohirrim, are really like just Anglo-Saxon kind of warriors, and like it's an Anglo-Saxon kind of culture, which is really cool because when you're reading the books, you get this Anglo-Saxon poetry that's just like really beautiful. It's like kind of like Beowulf style poetry, very Anglo-Saxon. And if you like that kind of stuff, I would recommend checking it out.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Aelmer, you know, we get this cool scene where he's like, haha, you're short, Gimli, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Legolas is like, I'll fucking shoot you in the eye.
It's so funny, dude.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man.
I think I remember their banter out of anything in that movie.
Dude, it was just so great.
It was epic throughout, all the films.
This, like, film, like, is what made me, like, love Gimli so much, dude. I just love his character so much, dude.
We dwarves are natural sprinters, very dangerous over short distances.
Just fucking all slow, dude.
Yeah, so we find out the Rohirrim, you know, burned all these orcs, whatever, and Merry and Pippin were part of that company. So Aragorn, with his great ranger tracking skills, is, like, trying to find them, kicks a helmet. Real life, Viggo Mortensen breaks his toe in that scene. That's why he screams there. Everybody knows that. I just like repeating the cool trivia, but yeah. Find out cool, he goes dude. In the forest, and then guess what? We discover Gimli, one, hates forests. So, yeah. You know, that's fun. And two, hey, dude, Gandalf is back. Where the fuck did he come from?
Yeah, that was like, I don't know, like, I'm pretty sure, like, in the book they handled it much better. But, like, in here, I don't know, it's like they didn't really explain it too well. I was like, I'm still kind of confused
over
it.
So you're talking about when he comes back as the White?
Yeah, Gandalf the White, yes.
Okay, yes. Now, what? Now I'm curious because I've never read the book. So what happens in the book? You know,
it's very similar, but like, so I explained this when we talked about Fellowship of the Ring. Gandalf is pretty much a spirit. It's these spirits come to Middle Earth, and they have a purpose, right? And his purpose is tied to the ring of the One Ring. And so when he dies, these people called the Valar, they're like the angels, kind of angel gods. Like, they control, like, different things, and they helped create Middle-earth and all of the Earth called Arda. And so the Maiar, which is what Gandalf is, they're, like, lesser beings than them, but still, like, pretty much godlike beings,
right,
you know?
Yeah.
So Gandalf is him, Saruman, Radagast the Brown, and then the two blue wizards. They're all Maiar that were sent to Middle-earth, and they all, you know, that's why Saruman is also tied to the Rings of Radagast, just kind of ran off like a dumbass.
Also, what's it called? The thing that he fought.
The Balrogs, yes, are corrupted Maiar that were corrupted by Sauron's old boss.
Yes.
And Sauron is also a Maiar. So.
I know who that is.
Yes, so.
I read just enough of the Silmarillion for that.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. So when he died, you know, he died, number one, honorably, you know, saving people.
Right.
His mission's, like he says, I've been sent back until my task is done, because he's still tied to the ring. So he gets sent back as Gandalf the White, because Saruman is no longer Saruman the White. He is Saruman of many colors, because white gets dirty or some shit, stupid-ass fucking Saruman. He's corrupt now as well. So Gandalf is now Gandalf the White, one of the highest order of wizards. He comes back more powerful, and it's really because his job isn't done.
Did the writers include any of that in the work?
They just kind of showed, you know, in the beginning how he fell, and then he talks about the darkness or whatever, and then life was brought back into him, and he was sent back until his job was done.
So they really didn't spend any time on it. Like,
no.
So this is, like, stuff that, like, you kind of backfill, like, through, like, the Silmarillion and things like that.
Right. I think, like, they do just enough for it to be like, okay, I understand he's back because his job wasn't done or whatever, you know?
Right. But, like, then you get the greater understanding of everything.
Right.
Through, like, the knowledge of the Silmarillion.
Yeah. Yep. So that's all pretty relevant stuff. And then from there, you know, we meet Shadowfax, the fastest horse ever. That's pretty cool. And we go and find Théoden, who is under the corruption of Saruman and Grima. In the book, he's more just, like, depressed, like, really fucking depressed. Like, Grima just, like, is whispering every day in his ear, depressing-ass shit, like, and that's why he's depressed. Whereas this, like, he's actually under the control of Saruman.
See, this one works better, you know? Like, it just, like, overall, like, Like, it wouldn't make sense if it was, he's just, like, in a depression, because he'd still be able to, like, make, like, sensible decisions and stuff like that.
Right.
Like, whereas, like, if it's, like, almost like a form of, like, mind control, then it makes a lot more sense. You know what I mean?
Right. And Grima, Jesus Christ, dude. Grima
that
is just
that guy is the ugliest motherfucker I've ever seen in my life, dude. That guy is a creepy-looking fucker, dude.
Yeah. And,
I'm just saying, man. He looks, he's, like, borderline terrifying to look at. I'm just like, Jesus, this guy just like, what the hell?
Right. I mean, and it helped, you know, in the book, the other difference is like, we don't know about this war kind of coming and all this stuff. Whereas in the movie you do. So like in the book, Theoden's just like, I don't know what to do, guys. Let's just go to Helm's Deep and kick it. You know, let's just go there and chill. But
even outside of like his poison state, that like Theoden's like overly like a proud guy and like almost like refuses to try and like ask for any help and, you know, reluctantly kind of gives in to like sound like what are like the horns or like the flame or whatever, you know, like what?
Oh,
are
you're
called?
Talking about the beacons and
yeah, the beacons.
In Return of the King. Yeah.
Is that in Return of the King?
Yeah, that's when Gondor was calling for their help in the Battle of the Pelennor Fields. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm getting mixed up now.
That's okay. It's okay. Yeah. We also get introduced to Eowyn, one of the only female characters in all of The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And she is going to be very important. But what do you think of Eowyn in this movie? What do you think of her characterization? How, like, she isn't satisfied with just being a shield maiden of Rohan. She's not satisfied with looking after the women and children, and like, she wants to fight.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a quality of a good leader, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I just think, like, you think of, like, the future of Rowan, and, like, it's probably going to be her, right?
Right. So, do you believe, right, this is a major conversation topic that I'm sure is everywhere online. I know it stems from the books.
Yeah, sandwich maker, dude, of course.
It stems from the books, but it also plays its role in the movies. Do you honestly believe that Eowyn is in love with Aragorn?
Yes.
Or do you believe she's in love with the idea of him? She's inspired by his honor and his and who he is and all that kind of thing that goes along with that, and she wants to be like him.
Oh, that's an interesting thing.
Because it's like, if Eowyn had that renown, that honor, like if she was everything she wanted to be, she wouldn't necessarily want to be with Aragorn, would she?
Why like, not?
Well, it seems like she's interested in the idea of who he is rather than who he actually is, you know? Like, and I don't know the answer to it. Like, it's in the movie they really make
That's
it
always
seem
like the most interesting concept to me, right? Like actually being in love with somebody or like the idea of being in love with somebody. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Cuz they're two different things. I always like find like it's like super like complicating, you know what I mean? Like,
right,
it's like, how do you like decipher which one it is, you know what I mean? Like, are you just like in love with the idea of like being with somebody like that, or like,
I think the movie definitely leans more into like she's in love with him.
Yeah,
you know, and like especially, you know, Return of the King, we get lines like people follow you because they love you, pretty much, you know,
right?
And like that kind of idea, it's taken out of context of what the book is, but in the movie it's definitely like, I'm in love with you, like I want to go with you, I'm inspired by you.
Yeah, I honestly would say that she's in love with him, you know. I don't know,
it's difficult because
my opinion.
Like, she doesn't know him too well, like they barely have any I think in the movie you can definitely make that connection that like they're in love, you know.
Yeah, but like, okay, there's like something.
Well,
you said that
he's not in love with her, sorry.
Well, yeah. But like, I don't think like you have to know somebody for that long. Like, I don't know. It's like, I do like in somewhat and like some aspects, like believe in like love at first sight and things like that.
Well, and she even mentions, I don't know if it's in this movie or in Return of the King, but she says, you know, I saw in you a great something from the moment, right, I first set eyes on thee or whatever. So
I feel like in a work of fiction like that, it could definitely be possible.
Well, especially,
right, yeah,
this, you know what I mean? This is, it really leans into the ideas of ancient fairy tales and folk tales and things like that. It's like very
what do you think, Colton?
Fairy stories.
Do you think like she's in love with him, or like in love with the idea and like almost just really aspires to be like him?
Gosh, I don't know enough to answer this, but I would say from a writer's perspective, when was this book written?
The book came out in 1954. The movie came out in 2002.
Okay. Right. Well. Yeah, exactly. I guess from a writer's perspective, I suppose it would be possible, and because I feel like perhaps Tolkien could be alluding to a more romantic ideal.
I think
you know a lot about the romantic era, you know, things like that's very possible.
Yeah, I mean, Tolkien hated the romantic era, if I'm honest. He was a big fan of the archaic kind of like old Anglo-Saxon, you know, he didn't like using words that entered the English language after the year like 1000 and would barely use anything that entered the English language after 1500. That's why in early editions of The Lord of the Rings, the word tobacco is in there, but he changed it to pipeweed because tobacco didn't enter until like 1600 or something.
Oh, so, interesting.
He was very careful about that. It's very fairy story, you know, kind of thing, you know?
So he would hate that I just used that word to describe this situation.
I can't say he hates romanticism. He hates romantic languages and like things like that. He's a big fan of the German kind of old ancient German kind of things, barbaric kind of stuff like that. And Anglo-Saxon, like he's very inspired by Anglo-Saxon culture and poetry and everything. So, but no, I mean, it's entirely possible. And when you think of Eowyn, she might just be romanticizing Aragorn because of who she thinks he is and because of the grace and honor he walks with. And one of the first things in the book we get when he goes to the doors, I forgot his name. Anyway, the door warden is like, I need your weapons. You know, in the movie, they just kind of hand him over or whatever. And then, but in the book, he's like, this is Andrew, Flame of the West. If any man draws the sword, I will cut the hands off. Shit, really? like he's just like very proud. You think he's kind of fucking with them a little bit. But like, he's just like, this proud fucking guy. Cause obviously in the movie, he's very unsure. He doesn't know if he wants to take on the mantle of the King of Gondor. He's very kind of, conflicted in, internally and stuff, and at this point he still has his regular sword, whereas in the book he has the shards of Narsil made into Andril from like the beginning of the mission pretty much, and like that is his goal, that is his mission, is to go become the King of Gondor. So
yeah, cool.
But yeah, Eowyn, I fucking love Eowyn, dude. I think she's great. I think
neither here nor there. I kind of find like her a little irritating at times.
I think in the movie she's definitely more grating, you know? Like you find like this weird like division, you know?
Yeah.
But what do you think about Theoden? You think he's a good king, a great king?
I think he's okay, but like I mean he definitely has his faults and, you know,
And he, like I said,
he's like overly proud and like, you know, he like holds grudges and things like that. And I don't know. It's like sometimes it's like.
I think he always has in his mind what's best for his people.
Yeah.
I don't think he's nearly as proud as, say, Denethor. But yeah, I think they managed to do Theoden pretty well, and we get to see this vulnerability in the movie when he has the funeral for his son Theodred, in the extended edition. I don't think it's in the regular edition, the theatrical release, but it's in the extended edition, and it's really interesting to see that. And we don't really get that in the book. We don't get any idea of Theodred or anything like that. But yeah, and then we get to move to Helm's Deep, right? And we get this insane battle with the wargs. And, you know, we think, you know, Aragorn might have died because he goes over the edge. And we just get to see Legolas fucking people up and getting on horses backwards and shit. Yeah. Like,
Legolas is so
by
cool.
The way, guys, this never happened in the book. They just kind of went to Helm's Deep, you know, and Aragorn was there the whole time and Éomer was there the whole time. But they keep doing these little things. And I think it works really well when you separate people, you add drama. They also wanted to add Arwen's story back in there somehow. You get none of that in the books except for like in the appendices, but they wanted to kind of bring Arwen into it, obviously. They don't want it to just be men, jack off, fucking circle jerk shit all the time. So
you're funny, dude.
And I also like in the extended like clips and stuff where they talk about some of this stuff, they talk because we get Haldir coming and bringing the elves for the Battle of Helm's Deep, right?
Yes.
That doesn't happen in the books, but what they talk about is like, well, we thought about having like these conversations with Galadriel and Elrond and all this other stuff and like bringing all these different elements in, having Arwen show up to the battle with them as well. And whatever, they ultimately decided not to have Arwen do that, just to have that flashback scene with her and Aragorn and things like that, which it pretty much works. And like, that's the coolest fucking thing I've ever seen in a movie, is when Aragorn returns, he fucking pushes in the doors and he's just standing there like sexy as fuck.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I opened every pair of twin doors like that I could after that movie. I was just like, like I was like, I'm gonna become fucking Aragorn, dude. It's awesome.
Is that why you grew your hair out in the first place?
I grew my hair out because I wasn't wrestling anymore, and I could. That's why I grew my hair out. But then I did dress up as Aragorn for Halloween that year. Okay. Anyway. Enough about me. So the big battle, the Battle of Helm's Deep.
Yes.
One of your favorite
great
things in the movie. It's pretty good. It's pretty damn good. You know, we get fucking Legolas on his little fucking surfboard shit, fucking shooting arrows at people. We get him and Gimli's little competition, counting how many they're killing. You know, it's just really good stuff. And then Gimli can't see over the fucking wall.
He's like, would you like me to get you a box?
Funny. One of my favorite scenes before that is like when Aragorn and Legolas are kind of arguing about, you know, the men who are fighting with them. And, you know, Gimli's like, most I've seen too many winters. And like we get this cool Elvish, and I was like, I memorized all of that Elvish when I was a kid. Like after I watched this movie, I would say it at school all the time. I would just walk around like saying the Elvish shit.
Come on, go ahead, show us what you got.
Love you, Christian.
Show us what you got here and now, bud. Go.
Okay, so he said. So Legolas says, "Or too few, they're frightened." And then he said, "Deletanai," which means, "And they should be." I forgot the first number, and he says Dekatamanik, Aragorn, Nagataga Thai, they're all gonna die, and he's I shall die as one of them. And then I also remembered the Elvish when he's like growing down the river and Arwen's like talking to him and she's saying Estelle Ohana and all this shit. I was like, I fucking love this shit, dude. I'm so weird, dude. Like
you are.
I'm sorry, God. Like and the thing is, dude, it took me years to find out like there are different forms of the Elvish language. There's like Sindarin and Quenya and all this shit. And I'm just like, dude, there's more than one dialect? What the fuck? Now I have to learn other. It's great.
Yeah, like people, like it's an actual language now. Yeah. Like people can actually like communicate with each other if they wanted to.
You're kidding.
Yeah. Like yeah.
And some of the Dwarvish, dude, is like pretty extensive as well. Mm. That they come up with. But dude, I'm not speaking fucking Khazad-dûm for it. Okay. Anyway, go ahead.
I mean, that's close enough to German, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Me and Colin could speak German.
Yes.
Anyway, but yeah, the Battle of Helm's Deep,
dude,
and then we get the catastrophic moment of the first light on the fifth day with Gandalf showing up with his staff and fucking Éomer. Hit him! Fucking rally to me, bitches! Oh, fuck yeah, Bridget. Ready to me! Ready to me!
Fucking Brigitte. Fucking.
Yeah. Cunt. But yeah, the Battle of Helm's Deep is really cool.
And it's super intense, and there's just like so many like orci and orcs, and just.
Yeah,
it's just.
I like how they had Haldir there. It just. When you get to Return of the King, the movie, you can have people who never read the book saying, well, why didn't the armies of Lothlorien show up, or people, the elves of Rivendell, or Legolas' dad, Thranduil, and the Mirkwood people, why don't they show up to help? We know why they don't in the books, is because they're fighting their own wars, you know? They're actually being assaulted by Sauron at that time.
Yeah.
So we know that reading the book, but we don't know that watching the movie. So viewers of the movie could be like, well, you're talking about how outnumbered you are. All you're doing is calling on Rohan. What about all the elves? Where the fuck are they, you know?
Yes.
So, but then again, who cares? I mean, it's cool. Haldir shows up. He dies pretty quickly, unfortunately, but.
We finally get to see him get his justice.
Definitely, yeah.
Guy's a douchebag.
Yeah.
Well, you know this through, The Hobbit and stuff like that, and that storyline and stuff. Talking about like the Elvish guy, right?
Haldir is the guy from the Fellowship who's like, the dwarf breathes so loud we could have shot him in the dark. That's not the same guy, I know.
Oh.
Yeah. Haldir's
cool.
Yeah,
I don't know who the hell that is then. No, I'm talking about like the elf guy, like he's like the leader of them. It's like, isn't that the same guy?
No.
From it's not
from the Hobbit, that's Thranduil, really? That's Legolas' dad.
Do they use the same actor?
No. Lee Pace plays him in the Hobbit movies, and it's a different guy. And
you're lying to me.
I'm dead serious.
Whatever, dude. Fake news.
Fake news. They're all blonde. They're all the same.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, though, my favorite moment in this whole movie is Sam's little monologue. Right?
Go ahead.
Okay. Do I have to recite the monologue?
Yeah.
Okay, so he's like, by all rights, we shouldn't even be here. It's like in the great stories, Mr. Frodo's. Mr. Frodo's, the ones that really mattered. Full of darkness and danger they were. And sometimes you didn't want to know the end. Because how could the end be happy? How could the world go back to the way it was when so much bad had happened? But in the end, it's just a passing thing, this darkness, this shadow. And in the end, all darkness must pass. And when it does, the sun will shine and it'll shine out the clearer. And then he says, But folks in those stories, they had lots of chances of turning back, only they didn't. Because they were holding on to something. Frodo's line, anybody?
I don't know.
What are we holding on to, Sam? That there's some good in this world, Mr. Frodo. And it's worth fighting for. That's like the best thing ever, dude. And the music swells. Da, da. And I'm just like, yeah, dude. Fuck, I love you, Sam Gamgee. Oh, it's great. Sorry.
I bet you cried like a little bitch during that scene. Fucking weeping at will. We call around these parts, if you're not used to our podcast by now, we call Christian the Weeping Willow because he can weep at will.
I don't know. I remember you. We were tweeting about something, and you said that you just start crying in the middle of the store. I don't remember what it was, but Jesus, yeah. Yeah, apparently I weep at will, guys, because I'm a sensitive male person.
Women like that, Christian. It's okay.
Oh, no, they I want a real man, not a man that's going to cry at the fucking Mufasa dying.
Hey, you watch your mouth.
I'm with you, dude. Mufasa's death is tragic. It is.
You watch yourself. You tread carefully.
I'm treading fucking thin ass fucking water, dude. Oh, yeah. Okay, so the Ents, dude. The Ents taking over fucking Isengard. They fucking flood the bitch. And everybody's like, dude, it's fucking in nature versus machines and shit. Like, they're taking it back, brother.
They dick our jibs.
They dick our jibs. But yeah, that's also really cool seeing the Ents and all that shit.
I'm sorry. How did they die?
The Entwives did not die. We lost them. And now we cannot find them. I don't suppose you've seen any Entwives in the Shire.
As you guys can tell, I really like Lord of the Rings. Yeah, so Two Towers, you said your favorite.
Yeah, dude. What did I give Fellowship?
I don't remember.
Rating-wise?
I have no idea.
Oh, man, your memory's terrible.
We did that like a month ago. I'm sorry, everyone.
Dang it. What would you give it?
8. What did I give Fellowship?
No. What do you give Two Towers?
8.7.
8.7?
Out of 10.
Disrespect. Colton?
Gosh, from what I can remember,
2.
Yeah.
3.7.
I'd give it maybe a 3 because I can't remember very much from it.
Damn.
It didn't leave much of an impact, but in all fairness, I watched it years and years ago. But for your guys' sake, I will go back and watch it.
You don't have to watch it for our sake.
10.
Wow. Really?
No. Come on, dude.
Come on, brother.
Come on, brother.
come on, brother. I mean,
8.9 in all series.
Yeah,
8.9.
Look at what this film. This film is 2002. The special effects are great. The music score is phenomenal. The acting across all the boards is fucking great as well. The what they managed to do with the motion capture on Gollum. I mean, that launched fucking Andy Serkis's career, dude. Like, it's all really, really good. I enjoyed the fuck out of these movies every time I watch them. And
Hell yeah, brother.
I enjoy the books as well. So, anyway, that is our review of The Two Towers. Let us know what you guys think. Make sure to subscribe and rate us on iTunes or Podbean or fucking wherever you download podcasts, dude, because it really doesn't fucking matter. We find us everywhere. And that's it, right? Follow us everywhere on our social media. You know where to find us. It's in the fucking links in our fucking description and shit. And buy our shirts on Amazon, please.
Do it now.
Yeah, thank you. Anyway, that's everything we have for you guys. Thank you to Colton for joining us midway through this podcast.
Mid-podcast.
Thank you, gentlemen.
It's a first time for everything, boys.
Yeah. Colton is a very cultured individual. He's traveled all around the world.
He's the world traveler of the group.
If you guys want to follow him on Instagram, it's Colton J. Shue, boys. Right? Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Thank you, Christian.
Yeah. S-C-H-U-H, Shue, German.
Sure.
Ich heiße Colton J. Shue. Yeah. So, thanks again. We're your hosts. I'm Nerdy Boy Christian.
I'm Nerdy Boy Scott.
And as always, we have... Oh, go ahead, Colton.
Oh, and I'm Nerdy
I'm
Boy
average,
Colton.
I'm average Colton.
I'm average.
He says, I'm occasionally nerdy Star Wars fan Colton.
That's right.
Yeah. Hey, that's yeah, right. Brother.
And that's everything we have for you guys. So, without further ado, we have one message for you, and that's
stay nerdy,
nerdy
boys.
Whee!
Bing, bing, ciao, ciao.
Boop, boop, boop.